Listen to this crowd. Might as well join them.
Back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Rick Sutcliffe on the mound as the Cubs clinch in 1984. Bruce Levine, Chris Ronji, final hour of Inside the Clubhouse beginning now. Grody is on when we're done. Cubs pregame show starts at 12:45 right here on The Score. They will take on the Pirates this afternoon. We do have a special guest, however, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com.
You know, Chris, our next guest does so many things. He's on the Marquee Sports Network, ESPN. You find him everywhere, and we are lucky to have him this morning right here on The Score and Inside the Clubhouse. My good buddy and a friend of Chicago forever, Rick Sutcliffe, joins us in Inside the Clubhouse. Sut, what's going on, buddy? Good morning.
You know, well, as always, Bruce, right back at you, a longtime friend. Always good to be with you. Love seeing you at the ballpark. Doing some homework, getting ready to do the pregame show for Marquee Sports Network this morning, and then hopefully wrap it up with the fifth straight win when it's over.
What do you see from the Chicago Cubs that's trending in a positive way right now? What in general do you like?
Wow, great question. And I'll be honest with you, the first thing that I thought of was the job that David Ross is doing. As you know, Bruce, I did television for the Padres after I retired, and I was around Bruce Bochy a lot. And then I started doing TV for ESPN. I did the MLB International, where I did all of the playoffs in the World Series. And, of course, in 2010, 12, and 14, the Giants won. The way Bochy handled that bullpen was unbelievable. I don't know that I ever saw him make a mistake. And you know, just talking about Rossi, watching what he did last year when they had an opportunity to win, they won. Watching what he's done in the Dodger series, what he did yesterday without Kimbrel. You know, like Bochy told me a lot of times, just because it doesn't work, it doesn't mean it wasn't the right move. And, you know, you saw Rossi send Tapera out there for, I think it was the eighth inning, so that Dave Roberts would send their best pinch hitter up, Matt Beattie. And as soon as they announced Beattie, Rossi went to the mound and brought in the sheriff. He's just done a terrific job with the bullpen, and I think that, in large part, is the reason they're at 500 right now.
What is the most important thing that he does?
I would say he protects the player. Everybody was wondering why Kimbrel wasn't in the game yesterday. You had the off day Thursday. What's the deal? You know, he's had a heavy workload. He's done a lot of things that have just been terrific. And you just it's early right now. This is a long season. It's not 2020. You got to protect those people. You got to give Rizzo a day off every now and then. And, of course, you know, the versatility of Chris Bryant gives the manager an opportunity to do a lot of that stuff.
Rick Sutcliffe, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, Chris Ronji and I until 11 o'clock. Chris sitting in for my co-host, David Haugh. And Sut, when you look at Jake Arrieta, I think of Rick Sutcliffe. And when I think of Rick Sutcliffe, I think of Frank Tanana. And I think of the power pitchers in the game that were dominant, that had injuries, and then had to reinvent themselves. And when you look at Jake Arrieta right now, Sut, I look at you after 1985 and coming back from that horrible tear of your hamstring and having to reinvent yourself and protect your shoulder, you know, from getting re-injured again after you did. It's really one of the great things in sports is to watch a player reinvent himself and be successful. What have you seen from Jake?
I think a lot like what happened to me after tearing the hamstring, and I knew my shoulder, something was wrong there. Eventually found out my labrum was torn. After I lost on opening day in 1987, Gene Michael called me into the office. And we were going to Philly after the first homestand, and he said, I want to bring you back on short rest. And my first thought was, I'd had a horrible year in 86, and I lose opening day. My first thought was that he's crazy. I mean, what? I thought they might have been releasing me at that point. It had been so bad. And Gene Michael, he goes, but let me tell you something. He goes, you're not a power pitcher anymore. He goes, if there's a decent hitting pitcher at home plate, you got the bases loaded in a 3-2 count, you better throw a breaking ball. But he goes, the thing is, you got the ability to do that. And if you walk the pitcher on a 3-2 breaking ball, I'm not going to question you. You did the right thing. And I think that's where Jake's at right now. He's got the ability to throw that cutter slash slider for a strike at any time. He can throw it in the zone. He can throw it to a chase zone. He can go to both sides of the plate with it. Of course, he's got the great curveball that he can put you away with when he needs a strikeout. He's just, you know, he's gotten smarter. And like you said, Bruce, there's a lot of things in common. I mean, Jake and I have talked about it. We laughed about it. I think Marquis did a thing called Brothers in Arms with him and I. Our lives changed when we had the opportunity to put on that Chicago Cub uniform.
Rick Sutcliffe joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. And yesterday, Zach Davies with 7 innings of shutout baseball. But Rick, you look at the rotation as a whole so far. I mean, you got a few guys with ERAs north of 6, Davies being one of them, Kyle Hendricks, Trevor Williams. Do you see reason, though, that maybe this rotation is going to stabilize as we get into May, deeper into this month?
Yeah, I do. I think that the rotation as a whole, Chris, has been trying to do too much too soon. Kyle Hendricks admitted that going into his Dodgers start. He was going to see how far his fastball would take him. He changed speeds. He located it. He used all four corners as far as the two-seam and the four-seam. And the next thing you know, he had a 7-inning complete game. You know, Keegan was the same kind of thing. Adbert has got the great slider, but it's his fastball that sets everything up. And then we saw it with Zach yesterday. He came into play. I think his ERA was the highest in all of baseball. You know, but he saw what those guys did in the Dodgers series where I think the number, Bruce, you know all the numbers. I think it was like 65% first pitch strikes that the staff did against the Dodgers in that 3-game sweep. I think Zach Davies just paid attention to that. He saw what Kyle did with his fastball, and I kind of think Trevor's going to try to do the same thing when we get there this afternoon.
Seth, you've been around the game for your whole life. You've seen great managers. You've seen average managers. You've seen poor managers. You've seen managers that can't handle people. You see managers that handle them beautifully. We were talking about, you know, Tony La Russa's struggle last week with and the other day with this new rule here. I asked Kerry Wood this question about 4 years ago when I said, how many games do you think managers impact a team? How many of them do you think they win? He said, I don't know about how many they win. He said, but I think I gauge managers by how many that they lose. They can lose more games if they're not up to snuff. What's your take on a manager's impact on a team?
Well, as you said, I've been around the big league since 1976, so I have been around pretty much my whole life. I've never seen a manager on any team at any point in any year that had an impact like Don Zimmer did in 1989. The boys of Zimmer, he did some things that I never saw anybody else try. He put on a hit and run with the bases loaded.
Yeah,
you know, in New York, and all three runs scored. Nobody's ever. I'm going to say that year he he was the difference in 25 wins or 25 losses with everything that he did. And, you know, years later when I was with Bochy, I asked him, I go, how are you so good with the bullpen? And I just thought of this, thinking about Rossi. You know, Bochy said, where did I spend my career? I go, well, you were a catcher. He goes, I was a backup catcher. I spent most of my time in the bullpen. And he goes, when the starter would have trouble or when he was dealing and the phone would ring to get somebody up, we'd all kind of look at each other like, what are they doing? We knew when a manager did the right thing, and we knew when he didn't. So, you know, he had a 10-year career as a player watching all of that take place. You know, Rossi's really kind of in the same boat, and I think, you know, a lot of that is Rossi just throughout his career paying attention, and now, you know, it's paying off big time for him that he's sitting in the big chair.
Yeah, and he also – I'm sorry, Chris. Sorry
no problem.
You. Rossi also said last year, and he said it into this year, I've made some mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes. I just got to learn from them. That's pretty refreshing to hear from a manager who is expected to be perfect from fans on a daily basis.
Yeah, that honesty, you know, from the very beginning. I mean, a lot of the guys, the veteran players on the team, knew it from when he was a teammate. You know, he's been around this organization now for 6-7 years. I think that's huge. And I'll tell you something else that Rossi admitted to me over the winter. The hiring of Andy Green has been unbelievable as far as help for Rossi. You know, Andy's a former manager. He's sat in a big chair. He's had to make those decisions. I'm sure he would admit that he made some mistakes along the way. And, you know, you just try not to make that mistake again. And I think a lot of the mistakes maybe that Andy Green made, he has kept that from happening with David Ross. You talked about La Russa and not knowing the rule the other day with the 10th inning and the pinch runner. I think there's a lot of times where Rossi will lean on Andy Green like, hey, what do we need to do here? Not that Rossi doesn't have the answer, but I think it's just a nice place to go just to reassure whether you're doing the right thing or not.
Rick Sutcliffe joining us on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. And I'm looking at this Cubs offense right now, and I'm trying to, you know, really assess them within the context of 2021 and the way offense has been around baseball. It, runs are down, hits are down, strikeouts are dominant, and, you know, that's manifesting in all the no-hitters that we've seen. And we just had one last night. We had almost a perfect game in addition to that no-hitter last night. We almost had two no-hitters in one night. We've seen five of them, almost six now, you know, with that one that just went away in the eighth inning last night for Sean Manaea. As you look at what's going on here and the Cubs within the context of the offense and pitching, what are your thoughts on this? Because everybody seems to have a feeling about what's happening in baseball now.
That's a great question, Chris. Bruce knows this, and you may as well. Your listeners out there may have heard me say it. For the last 10 years, I've told Major League Baseball, you had this problem before. You had it back in the late 60s when Gibson and Drysdale and Koufax and Marichal were throwing complete games and shutting everybody out. They wanted to get more offense into the game. They did by lowering the mound 5 inches. Okay, it went from 15 inches to 10 inches. They had no problem. Well, now these guys are bigger and stronger. They're throwing harder. There's a lot more information available as far as the labs concerned and spin rates and things that we didn't know about back then. Well, it worked back in the late 60s. Why wouldn't you do the same thing again? Why wouldn't you take the mound from 10 inches to 5 inches? You think about that downward angle. Yeah, it's not going to change the velocity, but it's going to change the downward angle and how difficult it is to make solid contact. I said that from the very beginning. You can't move the mound back. I know they're talking about it and whatever. You do that, you're going to create a lot of injuries. That's not what people do. If you lower the mound, it's not going to change a thing. You're not going to hurt anybody because a lot of time a pitcher in between starts does his side session off the flat ground. He doesn't even use a mound to get mechanically better. So I think that's the answer. I know the no-hitters are exciting and all of that, but I want to see more action. you know, I broadcast games, and I like to see something happening. I want to have something to talk about. I think that should be the first thing that they try to do if they want to create more offense.
That is interesting coming from a former pitcher. Normally you'd think they'd say, hey, this is great. You know, these guys, pitchers are dominating right now, and I love to see it. So to hear you, you know, somebody who's won a Cy Young and multiple All-Stars say that you want to see more offense, it's that's interesting to me. But you do think moving the mound back is a bad idea.
I think that's a horrible idea. I think it's going to create a lot of stress. It just doesn't make it. When I first heard it, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And now I know. I think there's a minor league or a team or something that where they're doing that. I think they'll find out right away that is not going to work.
Sut, as far as attention span by people, you alluded to it, you know, answering Chris's question here a little bit about more action needed in the game. But, you know, the general pace of the game is ridiculously slow, and a lot of it has to do, I think, with all the bullpen pitchers that come in. Are you for limiting the amount of bullpen guys that a manager can use, or is that too strict to try to quicken the pace of a ball game?
You know, I'm still not sure on that. I don't like that it can dictate the outcome of a game when you have to leave a guy in for so long. I'm not that guy, Bruce. I mean, I know people and particularly the media talk about the length of the games. I don't care. I'm a fan, first of all. I'm, you know, that former pitcher was a long time ago. I'm a fan of the game. I take my grandson Ryder to the ballpark, and he doesn't want the game to end. There's still a lot of things to be excited about. You know, I was a big fan of the 7-inning doubleheader last year. I understood that. I'm not a fan of it. I was the other night when we swept the Dodgers, right. But right. That's really the first time. I don't like that. I love the 10th inning rule. I love starting with a man on second, and I'll tell you why. We know from, you know, 24 years at ESPN, we know what the viewership is like in the 10th inning. It's gone. There's nobody paying any attention. Bruce, when you look out into the stands in the 10th inning, half the people are gone. Everywhere we've been, they're gone. Nobody, they don't care. They want to get home. They've had enough. So I think you get into those extra innings, I'm all for it. We've had plenty of baseball. You need to give me a winner. Who I want to know who wins the game, and that kind of gives you an opportunity to do it a little bit quicker.
Sut, Chris and I appreciate you joining us. It's always great to see you in town. It was fun seeing you and Rhino yesterday. I look forward to working with you tomorrow on the Marquee Sports Network. Have a great broadcast today, and we will see you out at the ballpark.
I appreciate it, buddy. Great being with you guys this morning.
Take care. Rick Sutcliffe, the Red Baron, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Chris, we have to go to a break. We're going to talk to the White Sox minor league outfielder Blake Rutherford. And when we come back, you're listening to 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score, Chris Ranji in for David Haw, and Bruce Levine, he's here too. This is Bruce's show,
yeah,
this is David's
show.
Yeah, I know. I'm in for David. He's doing something important today, so here I am.
Exactly, very important, and we're thrilled to have you, Chris, honestly. When I heard the news that Mitch and Shane wanted you to do the show, I was just... You know, jumping jacks would not be an overestimate of how I felt.
Yeah, sure sounds
that
way.
You're thinking I'm being sarcastic, but I'm actually thrilled that you are here. And you know, with your baseball background and with your love of the teams in Chicago, I knew you were the perfect guy.
I knew you were just. I saved that part where Bruce says, "I knew you were the perfect guy." I'm going to need that for the rest of my life.
And when I really knew you were the perfect guy?
Tell me.
When Mitch said that you're co-hosting the show.
It didn't give you a choice. He just said,
"Oh no, I didn't." He's an easy guy to talk to about what we're going to do with this show, but he is the boss.
Bruce, my man. So last night we're going to talk to Blake Rutherford, who is scheduled to join us here shortly on Inside the Clubhouse. And Blake is playing for the AAA Charlotte Knights, for the White Sox, and with all the injuries they've been dealing with. And yeah, they're in first place right now. They're a half game up in the American League Central, despite not having Eloy Jimenez and despite having just lost to Luis Robert for a significant amount of time. And Adam Eaton is dealing with some stuff, and he played yesterday, but he's been getting himself banged up as well. They've had some outfield issues as far as people not being available for them, so we might see them have to dip into the minors, and Rutherford could be a candidate at some point this season, so we're going to talk to him. But Bruce, as we sit here and we look at what the White Sox are, you know, a half game up in the division and the rest of the American League Central, I think it's safe to say the Twins have been really disappointing so far this year, which is okay by us, but they're 5.5 games out right now. Do you think they are, is that a team that as we keep going on will play themselves back into real contention? And 5.5 out in May is not, it's not insurmountable. There's all kinds of time for them. But the way they're playing, the way they look, are they going to right that? Are they going to be a threat ultimately for the Sox?
Let's see when the weather warms up here and the home run hitters start hitting home runs, if things turn around. Their pitching has to be better.
Yeah,
that's been surprising. They have good pitching. He hasn't been good. That's the reason I've liked the White Sox from spring training on. Yeah, you talk about the loss of Robert. You talk about Jimenez. You talk about Abreu slumping for most of the year. You have your leadoff hitter in Anderson out for 10 days with an injury. But to me, the White Sox pitching, you know, is just, you know, it might not stay as dominant as it is right now, but it's going to be good all year long, barring any other injuries or major, you know, major gaps as far as injury goes. They have tremendous starting pitching. They have fortification with young pitchers down in the minor leagues. They have a bullpen that is just starting to round into shape after a very tough, shaky start. To me, that's still the game. I mean, we've talked the whole show about how pitching dominates right now, and no one does it better right now than the Chicago White Sox with the best ERA in the American League. And night after night, you go out there and you say, you look at the White Sox rotation and you go, who's the ace? I mean, going in, we say, well, Giolito's the ace. But now, on a nightly basis, it's true that every guy that goes out there can dominate. All five of the guys that they have after Cease has gotten it straightened out here the last two. So stuff-wise and, you know, experience-wise, it's hard to look past. It's hard to look past the Chicago White Sox as the dominant team there and a team that should go deep into the playoffs in 2021.
And, Bruce, we go to our guest hotline brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com.
Now the pitch on the way, swinging a ground ball. It's going to be past a diving Hernandez. Inciarte is going to come home. Here comes the throw from Sheets. The tag by Nolan. Got him at home.
Yeah, it was actually a throw by Rutherford. Blake Rutherford joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Blake. Thanks for taking some time out today to join us on The Score. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Playing minor league baseball again, what is that like? What was the year like last year? And just getting together with a team again, what has that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, last year was a great opportunity to be around a lot of good players at the alternate side and just work on my game and trying to get better across the board. And but it definitely feels great to be back playing minor league baseball on a regular schedule, playing against other teams, competing with the guys on your team. It's exciting. It's fun. And obviously, it's only four games in, but it's definitely a different feel, and it's going to be an exciting and fun year, hopefully.
And, Blake, unless a player was able to be called up at some point during that 60-game season last year. You didn't really get the kind of competition you would need in order to continue to develop. So everybody was going through the same thing you went through last year. How much of a setback did that feel like to you?
I mean, I definitely think it was hard because obviously in a regular season you play 140 games or more, and you get to play all different teams and all different players and compete against them. But being a part of the alternate site, it was good in a way for the fact that we had a lot of good players in and out, a lot of players going up, a lot of players just there that have really good skills, really good pitchers. So being able to compete against them every day was also a good thing for me, just because I mean, I got to kind of work on my skills and try and perfect my my craft and perfect what I'm trying to work on against some really good players that are with our organization and with our team.
Blake Rutherford of the Charlotte Knights, the White Sox AAA affiliate, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Chris Ranji. I'm Bruce Levine. We do Inside the Clubhouse every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year. And Blake, you play in a great city in Charlotte, North Carolina. What is it like to play there? And what is the city like for a AAA player now that some of the COVID situations are starting to lighten up? Are you able to go out and enjoy yourselves as teammates there?
I mean, first of all, Charlotte's an amazing city. I mean, for my first time here, I've only been here 4 days or so, but I mean, you can already tell how amazing the city is, how amazing the fans are, obviously the ballpark, the view. I mean, you can't really say much about that. It's kind of indescribable. It's an unbelievable setup. As far as doing stuff, I mean, we're still following all the rules and stuff, so we kind of just get to see each other and hang out in the locker room and bond there. But it, I mean, it's good to be around the guys at the field and hang out. And I'm sure as the season progresses and we get more direction on what we can and can't do, we'll get to hang out more. But kind of just seeing each other at the field and hanging out at the field and getting our work done at the field. So as far as that, it's good to be around the guys there and just continue to put it all together for the season this year.
You know, from what I understand, you had a really nice, time at the alternate site last year. And again, it's not exactly the same as playing against, other teams, other competition. As you are trying to grow your game, what specifically do you feel like you need to work on now that the minor league season is going to begin here soon?
Yeah, I mean, just continuing across the board. I mean, obviously all five tools you want to continue to work on, but I mean, just working on little tinkers here and there with the swing and just making sure I'm putting myself in the best spot. Obviously I was able to work on putting the power into more game-like scenarios at the alternate site, and I was able to do that, and just continuing to work with our hitting coach here and alongside some of the players we have here, just to continue to fine-tune my swing and get it to where I want to. Obviously it's four games in right now, so it's still relatively new, and a lot of at-bats hopefully continue to be had. So just kind of working on that, but also working across the board, defense, base running, all that stuff, just trying to kind of make myself a complete player across the board.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, you're trying to do your work, and you're trying to improve in the environment you're in, but I would imagine it's difficult to not see what's happening at the big league level and see the, you know, the injuries and possible opportunity that might exist at the major league level. Is it difficult to balance, you know, like I need to work on my own stuff and I have to focus on this, but also I know there's this possibility that if everything goes right, I could end up, you know, with the White Sox this year for a short period of time, or who knows what could happen. Do you have difficulty, you know, trying to balance those things?
I mean, I think everyone obviously wants the opportunity just to go up there and play. I mean, obviously, you want those guys to be healthy too. I mean, Eloy and Robert, both good friends of mine. You want both those guys to be healthy the entire season. But I mean, really just trying to work on the stuff here. I mean, I feel like I can't get too caught up in just trying to make sure I get up there. Just, obviously I would love the opportunity and, would love to play in Chicago. But I'm just kind of trying to focus on what I'm working on here and the team here and just making sure that I'm putting myself in the best position to succeed, every night. And as far as succeeding is like helping the team win. And I feel like the rest will, eventually take care of itself, regardless of what it is.
Blake, Chris and I appreciate you joining us. Wish you all the best of health and good success this year. But in closing, I want to ask you about White Sox pride. You were number one pick by the Yankees, traded to the White Sox. There's number one picks all over the place for the Chicago White Sox at the big league level right now. How much White Sox pride is there in all of that? And you mentioned a lot of those guys are your friends and you played with. How close do you feel to that situation and what's going on in the organization?
Yeah, I mean, the organization has amazing players. I mean, obviously you see all the first round picks or the high round picks that are up there right now having success. Obviously, like you said, a lot of them good friends of mine. That I've known before or got to know since I've been here. But, I mean, it just speaks to the type of talent we have here and the type of talent those guys have. And hopefully soon I can be a part and continue to try and help that team win. But, I mean, we also have tons of talent across the board, across all levels. And, like I said, I think it just speaks to the organization of how deep we are in talent and how good they are at recognizing it.
Chris, we'll keep a spot warm for you here in Chicago. We look forward to seeing you down the line here playing Major League Baseball for the White Sox. Have a great season, and thanks for joining us on Inside the Clubhouse today.
Yep, thank you.
Appreciate it. Blake Rutherford of the Chicago White Sox affiliate, the Charlotte Knights, joining Chris Ranji and Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse. Chris, let's take a break and come back and talk about some of the more worldly things going on in the game.
I love worldly stuff.
Yeah.
I'm what they call a cosmopolitan kind of guy. That means I'm about the rest of the world. It doesn't mean I like Cosmos, the beverage. It means I like to know what's going on elsewhere.
And we'll do that.
That's Bruce Levine. I'm Chris Ranji. Inside the Clubhouse, next on The Score. Bruce Levine and Chris Ranji inside the clubhouse on The Score. I'm in for David Haw, who I believe will be back next week. We're with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Grody is on after us.
Joe Walsh? You want to talk about Joe Walsh or, you know, some of the great guitar players in the next few minutes? Yeah,
no.
Go ahead. We our good friend Mark Grody does
he's next.
The show right after us. And then
and
at
then,
12:45...
Yep, Cubs pregame at 12:45.
With Zach.
Yeah, first pitch at 1:20. Trevor Williams starting today for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in baseball, Bruce. It's not just here in town. Lots of stuff happening. And
so
there was
no greatest guitarist of all time.
No, I mean, we could someday if we have like another hour.
Just tell me who the greatest guitarist is of all time in your mind.
Of all time?
Sure.
Oh, my God.
If he had one guy only to play at your bar mitzvah, your wedding.
Well, the guy I'd pick is dead. So,
yeah,
Prince.
Me too.
Yeah, Prince.
Right.
Well, I'd love to see Prince play live, but I can't now because he's dead.
There's a lot of great ones, but I think you know Hendrix is always going to be the man.
Oh well, so. Yeah, Jimmy'd be great too.
Yeah,
those are two really good choices. And I didn't appreciate how good of a guitar player Prince was until after he died. But that's the guy I think.
Isn't that always the way, Chris?
Yeah.
Isn't that always the way?
Never until it's too late, man.
Back to baseball.
So there's been so much that's happened. And last night, a very interesting thing occurred in the Mets dugout. They're playing the Diamondbacks. And there's a commotion. And you could see the commotion happening in the dugout. And players are running back into the tunnel. And usually when that happens, it means there's a fight. And they're all going back there to break it up. Well, Francisco Lindor insists that's not what it was.
Hey, Francisco, what exactly happened in the tunnel there?
Steve, it was funny because I told him, I was like, hey, I'd never seen a New York rat. So we went down sprinting. I want to go see a New York rat. And he got mad at me. He's like, no, it's not a rat. It's a raccoon. I'm like, hell no, man. It's a damn rat. It's a New York rat, man. I was just crazy because we were going back and forth debating if it was a rat or a raccoon. Crazy, man. Insane.
Who was he? Who are you debating that with?
With Jeff. I was like, bro, you gotta check this out. I was like, this is a New York rat. He's like, no, man, I've been here longer than you.
They were totally
There's
fighting.
A rat, all right.
Yeah, they were fighting. But, I mean, the players are insisting, and Noah Syndergaard was sort of joking about it. Like, but
let's preface it by saying that McNeil and the shortstop have had some problems turning double plays, okay? Mm-hmm. And with him being a superstar now over there and not hitting at all, frustration level is at an all-time high for Lindor, okay? So they blew a double play in this game, and the assumption here would be that they were talking about, you suck. No, you suck. No. And there were a couple pushes and shoves, and guys went down there, and it was over with in about a minute. You know, so these things happen. It's interesting. Yeah. I think as fans of the game, we have a tendency to think that there aren't altercations. That if there are altercations, something is horribly wrong, and it's really not that case, Chris. Yeah, something's horribly wrong. Lindor is hitting like $110. And he's being paid $34 million a year for the next 10 years. And there's a frustration is an all-time high for him at this point.
Well, here's what I'll say about it. Sometimes there are, and we don't know exactly what happened, and maybe we never will know, in the Mets clubhouse. But there's usually when something does happen and they want to cover it up, or they want it to just kind of go away, they'll say, oh, no big deal, you know, nothing. Nobody, to my knowledge, has ever lied to the point where they made up a story about a New York rat and a debate about whether or not it was a rat or a raccoon or a possum or whatever it is. That's a first. And so what I hope
I'll
happens from here on out, next time there's a disagreement and we catch wind of it in any clubhouse and they try to cover it up, come up with the most fantastical story you can. Whatever
I'll
it is.
I'll tell you what, they get 100 points for creativity.
Dude, that's...
That's, you know, a rat or a raccoon. I haven't seen a raccoon walking down New York, you know, down Broadway. Or I've seen a lot of different things in New York, but I've yet to see a raccoon hanging out there, especially in a, you know, Citi Field. Unless, you know, he got... somebody got him in with a special ticket, you know... That raccoon would have a hard time getting in there.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very difficult time. Rat, that's another story. That's indigenous. That's the indigenous animal to New York. You know,
and to Chicago.
We're
built
know,
on a swamp,
I love Chicago.
Bruce. I do, too.
I love Chicago. You know?
And I used
to... But you do see the signs with the... with
the rat poison.
Yes.
Guys, I saw two massive rats just driving down Lake Street on the way in this morning.
Yeah.
So,
what were they driving? A Lincoln? Or what were they driving in? A Lincoln? Or was it a...
some kind of sedan. I don't know. I didn't get...
Toyota?
Bruce. Didn't have coffee yet. I wasn't looking at the make of the vehicle.
I bet you one of them was smoking a cigar, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, you saw a couple of rats driving down Lakeshore, huh? What were they driving?
We've gotten off track, but in reality here, fights among teammates happen all the time. It's just that when we get wind of it, or if it does happen in a dugout, like a Reggie Jackson or and Billy Martin or Zambrano and
Bryce
Barrett,
Harper Papelbon,
John, the closer, John
Papelbon, yeah.
Yeah, Papelbon. Yeah, not a nice guy. I was on the other side of that one for sure.
Yeah, he seemed.
But
like
in reality, when we do find out about these things, like I reported the Frazier Adam Eaton fight a few years ago, and how there were a couple of fisticuffs and their lockers had to be changed. The thing that Frazier was upset about when he talked to me, he said, "Well, you know, I hate that you know," he said, "but the worst thing is that someone in this clubhouse had to tell you that. And that makes me feel pretty bad." Well, you know, that's just the way it goes. Sometimes we find these things out. Chris, it's been a real pleasure having you here. David Hall will be back next week. We have a lot of people to thank, including Blake Rutherford of the White Sox affiliate, Charlotte affiliate joined us. Rick Sutcliffe, the Red Baron, doing the game on Marquee today, joined us. We also have to thank Adam Staszynski for doing a job well done. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. And also, I write on our website, Sox and Cubs, every day on 670thescore.com. Thanks for doing this. I really enjoyed being with you.
Well, I love you, Bruce. I wouldn't have said no in a million years.
Have a great week. Mark Grody's next on 670 and 670thescore.com.